welcome to The Assembly Line, Dev Bytes, an NES homebrew podcast. I'm your host, Kevin from Kahan Games. And today, I wanted to go as far back as I, you know, almost all the way. I thought it was all the way, but after I got to talk to him, he name-dropped a couple people that were around before he showed up. But I am talking about none other than Memblers, Joe Parcell. He is the creator of nestdev.org. He's the creator of the original commercially available homebrew garage cart. And he is the creator of GT-ROM. I mean, he's done so many things. I've known Joe for a number of years now. We've hung out a few times. But I've never really gotten to talk to him about how things were when he was starting out, you know, what the landscape looked like, who contributed what, you know, where he was at before he even started taking a look at NES stuff, if he knew how to program, that kind of thing. So it was really awesome getting to talk to him one-on-one, ask him some questions that I've wanted to ask for a while. I think there's a lot more to be talked about. His brain is just on another level, and I could talk to him all day. But you know, we try to keep these bite size, pardon the pun, but, let's get him on here and, get to know Joe Parcell, creator of GT-ROM. All right. I'm here with Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. All of the people that I've had on so far have, you know, they came around to the scene a little bit later, but you were around from the early days, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just, I know there were people doing it, doing some stuff before me, doing like, you know, figuring out the actual emulators and stuff. But I started, you know, I found the email lists and was following that, and they were mostly talking about emulator development, and I was just a little bit, you know, going over my head, and I just wanted to make an NES game.
So there was an email list?
Yeah. Yeah, it was on those, you know, it was before Google. I think the Yahoo bought it out, and then it, you know, became something. But
wow. So let's go back to, what do you remember as your first video game related memory?
So I remember being in someone's house and playing the Chopper Commando on the Atari, the Activision game. Mm-hmm. And then I remember seeing, you know, playing Super Mario Brothers at someone's house in the neighborhood before I got an NES. And I had a ColecoVision, was my first game system.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you didn't own an NES right away?
Nope. I mean, it was, I don't know when, I was probably 87 or 88 when I got an NES, maybe. Who knows? But I was about 5 when I got a Coleco, though.
I don't even think I've played a ColecoVision before.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So it seems like you've dedicated a lot of your time and effort to the NES. What was it about the NES that sort of drew you in most of all the systems?
Well, the games were just so much better on the NES because they just had a lot more to grow with.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite games on the system?
Oh, jeez. I mean, thinking of stuff like, you know, like Castlevania 3 and like Genghis Khan on the NES. I mean, there's just so much stuff on there.
So back in this email list, like what sort of information was out there? As far as the NES was concerned, what kind of information was out there, you know, back when you were just getting started?
Well, yeah, they were mostly figuring out these different mappers for the games and getting the games dumped. And I remember I saw a post from Mr. Bananmos, you know, Michael Winnick, mm-hmm. about a Nerd Tracker, and that's what really caught my attention, because I was already using trackers for making music on the computer, like Fast Tracker and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a hold of that because that's one of the things I was trying to do, was I found the source code of the game Mauser, and I changed it. I started, just changing stuff in the source code and changing the music. And I was like, geez, I'd like to make some music on the NES, but wasn't able to do it. And then once I found Nerd Tracker, then I was able to, get to.
Did you already know assembly language at the time, or did you teach yourself at this same period trying to figure out how to change things?
That was pretty much my first programming experience. I mean, I did some stuff with QBasic, but it was like, just basically print and input, and just made like a little text adventure game. But then I was just learning assembly, just learning how to program.
So what kind of stuff did you change in Mauser? You just wanted to change the music, you said?
Yeah, I changed the graphics and I changed the music, basically, yeah.
It's like early hacking.
Yeah. One funny story with that, too, was that was on my old 386 computer. And after I lost that computer, but I'd posted that ROM onto a news group, the old Binaries Emulators Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And so I went on there and asked if anyone had this, specific file name. I think it was like testr.nes, and someone posted it, and I was like,
"So you got your file back?"
Yeah,
that's awesome. So who were some of your peers at the time? Who were some people that were figuring things out at the same period you were getting into it?
Well, there's all the emulator people kind of behind the scenes, but I know, but it's like a. Chris Cavill was posted on there about doing Solar Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was looking for someone to do music or something like that. And so I just started, before I even asked him, I just started like writing music like immediately. This is what it would be like, I guess, if I did. But then I asked him, if, I said, all right, I can do it. And he's like, yeah, cool.
So he was the first, and correct me if I'm wrong, he made a website essentially teaching people how to make a physical version of Solar Wars, right?
Yeah.
Was that the first sort of physical homebrew at the time?
I think, well, because he made just the copy for himself, and I don't know if anyone really built it, but I mean, it was a ROM release, and there was at least one cartridge made that he made. So
so you are you're the creator of nestdev.org, right?
Yeah, I sort of founded it it was on GeoCities originally.
What led you to want to create that? Like, what were your goals for creating that website?
Because I was looking up trying to learn all this stuff. And it was just little bits of information scattered around on different sites. So I was like, I was just going to put it all together. And I was like, well, it could be a good website to make so other people can benefit from having this stuff together.
How many people did it attract at the beginning? Like how much traffic was it getting?
Quite a bit. I mean, I had, one of those regular website, one of the little counters at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And you could click, see the countries people were from, and you see people from, all over the world, it's like, North America and Japan a lot, and South America and Germany and UK and Sweden. They definitely like Sweden and Finland seemed like he had a lot of visitors from there. And I remember seeing too, those visits from Nintendo's like domain in Japan. I thought that was pretty fun.
Oh, the official Nintendo domain?
Yeah.
No kidding.
I was like, wow, they saw it.
So how much was known about the NES's technical side? Like, were all the addresses and everything already known at the time you created this website?
Yeah, I mean, there was documents. Stuff like the scrolling wasn't really, like, understood. Like, the 2006 register wasn't, fully known. But there was, like, a Loopy wrote a document on that, helped out a lot. But the looping and the looping emulator supported that.
Wow. So did you have a hand in helping to create any of the emulators throughout the years?
That stuff was pretty much over my head.
Gotcha. So what's your background with electronics?
Well, I'd always been interested in the stuff, but I think it was kind of in the NES stuff that really got me into like messing with hardware stuff. Really, I started out, you know, like hooking the Nintendo controller port up to like a parallel port. Mm-hmm. And then I switched over to the serial port.
So you could use your controller on your 386?
No, it's the other way around. It's so the NES could communicate to the 386.
Oh, wow. So were there a lot of emulators that could run in DOS?
Yeah. Nesticle was pretty much the big one. Loopiness was better than Nesticle as far as like compatibility and everything. Mm-hmm. So that was, it was pretty good for the time. It was, because I remember having a 4666 computer for a while, and it ran stuff like Nesticle and Loopiness were pretty much full speed.
And is this the same Loopy that created some mappers for the Power Pack?
Yep.
Wow. So he's been around since the early days too.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So you created GT-ROM. Was the creation of a new mapper a large undertaking?
No, that was one of the simpler ones for sure. I've had a lot of weird designs that I haven't fully fleshed out.
Is there anything that you're in the middle of working on that you're still trying to get done?
Yeah. Yeah, there's one that I'd really like to build, where it's pretty much just an FPGA and there's really not much else on the board.
Is it an actual mapper?
Well, the thing that'd be interesting was that the program would be in a serial flash. And so you'd have maybe like 8 megabytes per game or whatever, but the ROM would contain the mapper too, so you could put whatever mapper is like part of the mapper is built into the game ROM.
Interesting.
And that ship's interesting too, because you can switch between, you could have multiple, basically have 4 different mappers loaded at once, and you can switch between them. And
all on the same FPGA?
Yeah.
That's a little above my head, but it sounds impressive. Can you give me an example of, like, can you give me a practical example of how you could use 4 different mappers, like, at the same time?
Well, I guess, there'd be different. I know one of the modes I've wanted to do is, has a 6502 core. So you'd run a 6502 inside the mapper. You could run your NES program there. And that way, you know, you could run your original code without having to change much. Hmm. It'd be faster. And, you could just on the fly, just, you know, say, oh, I want to switch back to a normal kind of mode.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really cool. How far along is that?
Well, a lot of the firmware is done. I just really got to do the board layout again. I had it mostly done, and I got distracted by a lot of other stuff that went on. And
yeah, just like everything, gotta find time.
Yeah.
So, what led to you releasing a physical version of Garage Kart? Like, what made you want to make an NES homebrew commercially available? It was a limited run, right? You did like 30 of them.
Yeah, it was a couple dozen at least. I think I want to say about something 24, 25 on the run, something. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple ideas. The thing that started it was kind of funny. Was this? It was someone on the NESDEF forum was like, it's like, oh, I want to propose to my girlfriend and I want someone to do a ROM hack of Mario for it. And I was like, well, sure. I mean, I could, use, $50 or whatever.
It's a lot of money back then.
So I did that, I like tacked the palette and changed the player to the princess from Mario 2. And the guy was like, hey, I like your the other games. Can you make a cartridge for that too? And I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I can just, I was going to make another cartridge for that stuff. And then I never heard from the dude again. So I don't know. The proposal didn't go well or something. I don't know. And I was like, well, shit, that's when I was around the time that I had the idea to make this was wanting to make a game that had a, you know, mapper that puts with some features like an interrupt and all this stuff so I could do audio stuff. And I was like, well, I started designing this thing called Squido. I was like, well, I need some money to be able to prototype that. And I was like, well, I can just go ahead and sell this little multi-card I was putting together, and I added a menu to it. And
how quickly did they sell out? Because, I mean, this was early. I mean, there wasn't really a demand for physical NES homebrews at that time. It really hadn't been done. So I'm curious, like, how quickly did people want it?
I mean, I didn't have too much trouble getting the list filled out. I mean, I didn't take like a pre-order with money. I just said, hey, you know, if you want to go ahead and reserve one or whatever, I'll put you on the list. And most of the people paid when it was time to ship them.
Was this done on NESDEF or is this pre-NESDEF?
Actually, I didn't do it on NESDEF at all. I did it on NES World because I figured, you know, I didn't want to. Wasn't trying to turn NESDEF. Well, I basically figured, you know, NES World has like the marketplace type stuff, and NESDEF didn't have
kind of. Right.
So, yeah, that was like Mark Nielsen's NES World site that's been around forever.
Yeah, that was the first site that I joined because that predated Nintendo Age by a little bit.
Before that, I was on like, I remember like TSR's NES Pit and some other sites too. I can remember those weird little forums where like they'd make posts and the ones at the bottom would just, you know, expire from just being pushed down. People would accidentally post, you know, like 10 copies of their thing or whatever.
Rob Bryant had a site at this point too, right? Did his site exist at this point? I forget what his site was called.
I can't remember what all he had. Yeah, he had a lot of like his ROMs and then he had his podcast and the Dogcast on there. And I can't remember what year that showed up. That was probably a couple years later after the Garage Cart and stuff, maybe.
So you being around since the beginning, like how do you feel about where the NES homebrew scene is at today?
Yeah, it's gotten a lot more interest for sure.
do you like the direction things have gone, or do you wish things had gone a different way?
No, I think it's gone pretty good. It's just grown so much, and there's so many more people making games. It's definitely competition if you want to release a good stuff, but there's, you know, so many more people buying the stuff that are interested in it and actually want to
for sure
have it. And having a ROM is just as good as having the cartridge if you're just, you know, using flash cartridges or emulators or whatever. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are starting to release ROMs in addition to physical cartridges, which has been nice because it gets so expensive trying to collect all the cartridges.
I mean, I wish I'd gotten more of the stuff done that I wanted to do, like a lot more of the communication bootloader for a GT-ROM cartridge, because, you know, I'd like to have it to where, you know, someone could, you know, purchase their ROMs and just load them onto their GT-ROM cartridge, even, and, you know, that's an expensive flash card.
Yeah, for sure.
Have a little browser where you could, you know, browse stuff on your NES.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get Brian to add to the AVS. I really wanted him to add like a marketplace type to where people could, you know, just download the games over the network and just put it on the power pack that way.
Yeah.
I guess there wasn't enough space though.
I have some NSF plan software that actually works. I mean, it's been a little while since I've tested it again, but I've used it and basically to where I had a server online with a bunch of, you know, massive collection NSF files, and the NES connects to the server and, you know, downloads the NSF file, and it just runs the sends the register writes directly to the NES.
Oh, wow.
NES sounds.
How long does that transfer take?
Oh, it's pretty much instant. I mean, it's really? Like, fast as your internet connection, it downloads the NSF and then it just emulates it locally on the computer.
God, I hope that we can get to that point to where something like that is readily available, because that would change everything.
So I remember Elsa the Unicorn game was one of the things that got me started about that kind of idea too originally, because I was thinking, you know, you could run an NES game on the server and then it just sends, you know, the IO
right
over the network to the NES.
Yeah, I would love that game to get out there one day. I had Antoine from Broke Studio helping me with that, and I've sort of turned to everyone I could to just try to get that going, and it's close, but I don't know a lot of server programming, so it's slow going on that side of things.
Yeah, I don't do much networking stuff.
So what do you have any favorite homebrew games throughout the years?
Huh. Guess I should have thought about that question. There's just like so damn many. Jeez.
Yep.
I like Lizard a lot too. That's definitely cool.
Yeah, that game's massive.
I like the Neotoxin. I wish that game had been finished.
I forgot all about that. That's definitely a good one.
Yeah, because Snowbro, he was on the NestDev kind of email list and doing stuff early on.
Really?
His source code was some of the stuff that I was learning from him and Chris Coville.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You know, ever since Brian did his Nerdy Knights tutorials, that's where a lot of us turned to learn, but that didn't exist when you were getting started. So you're saying you learned from Snowbro and Chris Coville?
Yeah. Yeah, using looking at their source code. And I think like the Sprite Zero hit detection I had was like a copy and paste on a Chris Coville source code for a long time. It had like different indentation and stuff. You could tell I was like around in a place looking.
So were they the guys that were reverse engineering the system, or were there people that predated even them that were figuring this stuff out? Do you know?
Well, I mean, there was, of course, like Koitsu, or that back at the time was Yoshi, Jeremy Chadwick. He did the NES technical document. And he'd be someone to talk to ask about that kind of stuff, because he knew everybody back then that was, you know, getting that stuff figured out and documented.
Is he still around? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's been like active on the NestDev forum or anything, but
I wouldn't mind reaching out to him if I could get his contact info from you.
Yeah. He hosted the website for a long time when it was on Parodius.com.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I forgot it used to be there. Yes. That wasn't that long ago. How long ago was that it switched over?
Oh, man. Yeah, that must have been 5 or 6 years or something. I'm just guessing.
Wow, like, has it been that long?
Or maybe longer than that, even. Shit, oh man, it probably has been.
Time flies.
Yeah.
We're getting older.
Yeah. There was also the NestDev IRC channel that it was already pretty active when I joined. But I ended up, getting help. Learning how to program 6502 and stuff there. And that's where I ended up meeting Kevtris. And I found out that he lived in the same town. And so we started hanging out in person. And he helped out a lot with, getting up on hardware and the software stuff as well.
So other than the networking stuff that you talked about, is there anything that hasn't really been done yet that you're hoping to work on?
Yeah, there's, a lot of it comes down to networking type stuff again, because it's, connecting the NES to other things. But I had some software where I'd like to be able to, just having the general link between the computer and the NES, you can do a lot with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some stuff that I'd worked on that where you could use like a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse and stuff, just having it connected to your computer.
How would those interface through the control ports?
Yeah. It'd just be like their NES controller port to the, it'd be through a separate host system.
Uh-huh.
So could be, it'd be possible to do it on a cell phone. That's one of the things I wanted to try. Is, you just have your NES controller port, you can plug it into either USB on your computer or USB on your cell phone. And then you can communicate with the Bluetooth devices that way.
I want to get to the point where I can flash games wirelessly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually not too hard. I've done some tests with that because there's a Bluetooth mode that's funny, because the USB stuff I use is basically backup works compatible to RS-232, and there's a Bluetooth modules that are also like the same kind of thing.
It's crazy, man. It's like, if you can dream it up, it seems like it's doable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think INL and Broke Studios will both have cartridges out with the wireless stuff. If they don't, if they're not out already.
Yeah, I know Broke Studios is pretty much done, because I think it's running on the Super Tilt Bros.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how close INL's is. Seems like he's got a lot of stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah.
Are there any, do you ever work on games anymore? Do you have any games that are like halfway done that you'd like to finish one day?
I wouldn't say they're halfway done, but I've got some.
They're started.
Yeah. He has different amounts of work on things where, I don't know, one of the ones that was kind of funny was this kind of like a turn-based wrestling RPG game with like a really weird kind of sci-fi setting. It's kind of bizarre.
That sounds amazing. How far along would you say that is?
There's not a whole lot of the NES stuff. There's definitely a lot of music done for it on the NES. Some of the product, some of the stuff was basically going to be text based. So it wasn't even really planned to be even graphics for it. So a lot of it's like the codes just running on the, just in C and running on the PC, but it'd be pretty simple to port it.
Yeah.
Compile it for 6502. So
we didn't talk much about music, but you started out as a musician, you know, tracking stuff on PC, you said.
Yeah.
Do you have any musical training, or are you just all self-taught?
I had like guitar lessons. That was about it. I had one teacher I just did for a month, and I wanted to do for maybe, you know, 6-7 months. That was about the extent of my training.
Do you still play guitar at all?
No, I haven't really been at it for a while, but there was a time when I used to just sit around almost all day just playing guitar. But
So you started out tracking on PC and DOS, and then moved over to Nerd Tracker when that came out, you said?
Yep.
How long were you working in that before Famitracker came out?
Let's see, what year did Famitracker come out, I wonder?
I have no idea.
Because I didn't switch over to Famitracker immediately, but I think I started using it like a year or two after it was out, a little bit after I started playing with it. I wasn't really doing as much music then, too, I think.
I think Rob still uses Nerd Tracker. It's crazy. He never moved on.
I thought he has his own sound engine and stuff, too. Wasn't he doing stuff with, I think he was doing Dragon SF.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
I think he did. He probably did use Nerd Tracker for a while.
Yeah, that's how I learned about it from him.
I'll still put the program in my code if I need to play an old, you know, NED file or whatever. So,
so is there a big difference between the trackers, or do they all more or less work the same way?
Yeah, they're pretty similar, but of course, Famitracker is a lot easier to use because you got the envelopes and everything. Nerd Tracker didn't have envelopes at all.
Oh, really?
So you'd either program stuff, you know, every line by line, every volume level, or you just had like an auto fade where it would just fade everything, every tick or whatever.
So Bo put some of your music in 0 to X. Does your music exist in any other games that I don't know about?
No, it's not really in much releases that I can think of.
Do you have a lot of music that is sitting that you've never used anywhere?
Pretty much, yeah. There's that. I did do one NSF release. I was going to do a series of three NSFs that basically had everything that was in Nerd Tracker. But only the first of the three got released, and the first one was just like original songs that were kind of longer, and I had another one that were just shorter jingles and stuff, and then another third one that was going to be cover songs. Most of the cover songs are in that 2A03 archive and places like that, though.
You said the first one got released?
Yeah.
Where can we find that?
I don't know where they put in NSF files these days. I think there used to be 2A03.org and that went away. I think I called it chipography.
I'm going to look it up. I want to try to find this.
It's like a 520 kilobyte NSF file or something.
Chipography. Here you are on Last.fm. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to listen to this. I'm excited. Because you're pretty incredible. It's amazing the talent that people have. A lot of people are sort of relegated to one thing, you know, being good at programming or being good at graphics. But people that can do multiple things really blow my mind. And your music is really, really good.
Well, thanks.
I'm going to put a link to, it looks like they have it here on NES.science too. So I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes so anyone can check it out if they want to. And I'll actually put in a little bit of a tune after our interview here just so people can hear it.
Cool.
I think I've covered everything I want to talk about. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to tell the world?
Not that I can think of at the moment, but the last track on that NSF file is the speech synthesizer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At least I think it was, or there's another funny sample at the end too, but one of them was the speech synthesizer.
Awesome. I'm going to check this out. Well, Joe, I really appreciate your time, man. And, I appreciate everything you did, in sort of fostering where the scene has gone, and creating GT-ROM has really allowed me personally to release games way more affordably than I could in the past. And I also have never thanked you sort of in person for converting Larry over to true GT-ROM and allowing me to re-release that. So thank you for everything you've ever done to me, done for me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah, that was fun doing the Larry conversion.
All right, man. Well, I hope you have a good night.
Yeah, you too. I was going to mention too, I've still got plenty of GT-ROM boards if anyone wants to get some from me.
Oh, good to know. I think I'm going to do some more runs of a couple games. So yeah, I'd definitely like to get some from you.
Cool.
That's it. Appreciate you for tuning into this episode. I want to thank Joe again for allowing me to interview him. If you want to follow Joe on Twitter, he can be found at Joe Parcell, P-A-R-S-E-L-L. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at A Ton of Glaciers. What else? We have a Patreon, patreon.com/NESAssemblyline. Every year, SoundCloud charges us, I don't know, $140 or something to host all the MP3s of all of our episodes. So all the money we get from Patreon goes directly toward paying our server costs. I want to thank the Human Thomas for the song you're listening to right now that we use for our intro and outro songs. No emails were sent in this week, so unfortunately I won't get to read any cool questions, but if you have any questions for me, you can always reach me at nesassemblyline@gmail.com. And I think that's it. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, keep playing those NES homebrews.